Yablet!
Some kill, they're leaving it very open. Widmar, well, what a kick! It's a goal!
Look at him go, Mr. Magic has kicked the most unbelievable goal you have ever seen in a month of Sunday.
Hello 90s footy fans, welcome to episode 58 of the 90s Club Footy Podcast. This week we chat with former Footscray and Richmond star Leon Cameron. Leon, a Western Victorian football export, was picked up by the Footscray Football Club with pick 7 in the 1988 National Draft. He spent 10 seasons at the Witten Oval, playing 172 games, which also included a Best and Fairest Award win in 1993. He then moved to Richmond in 2000, spending 4 seasons at Tigerland, playing a further 84 games. In this episode, Leon talks about the day he was drafted, playing alongside some Footscray greats, being targeted by the West Coast Eagles, the prelim final losses in 97 and 98, the famous Matty Knights and Tony Liberatore scuffle at the G, and coaching in the AFL. I hope you enjoy the 58th member of the 90s Club Footy Podcast, Leon Cameron. Leon Cameron, thank you for jumping on the 90s Club Footy Podcast. Great to have you on, mate, and being a fellow Southwestern Victorian, great to catch up and reminisce about your footy journey.
Yeah, it is, Trent. Look, it's gone quick. I sit here at 50 years old, and yesterday year I was at Woolstore Primary School playing school footy on a Friday against Croyte, I remember, and back in the 80s. But now you blink and I'm 50, and enjoyable times, especially growing up and playing footy, junior footy down there, and then eventually playing for South, and then lucky enough to get to the big smoke after that.
And what a great career it was, mate. Before we sort of get into the times at the Footscray Bulldogs and also at Richmond, we still know your involvement in footy is pretty strong. Obviously, since you retired, you really haven't been out of the AFL sector, obviously with different jobs in assistant and senior coaching roles. But this year we see you working at the Sydney Swans with the academy. How are you enjoying the new role? And obviously maybe a bit different to what you were doing last year with that senior coaching role at the GWS Giants.
Yeah, it is, Trent. And look, I sort of made it a concerted effort to probably stay in footy, but probably not at the highest level. And I also wanted to stay in Sydney because family the kids were heavily invested in their school. So we wanted to stay up here. We liked living up here. Had a great time at the Giants for 10 years. And, you know, all good things are going to come to an end, as we know. As they say in footy, you're either getting hired or fired, and that's probably what happens. Our arch rival at the time when I was at the Giants, the Swans, just had some really good dialogue with Tom Harley and, you know, Charlie Gardner and John Longmire. I mean, clearly it was hard because we were arch rivals for so long, but, they're such a really good club. And if you go across all the clubs, they're all good clubs, good people. So, we just talked about some academy stuff and, their junior pathway with a number of kids coming through, and whether it be 11-year-olds to 15 or 16s and 18s, it's totally different to what I'm doing. It's good. It gives me a real admin sort of football management side of things another avenue to see which way I want to go into the future. And, I've been really lucky enough to the Swans to embrace me and give me that opportunity.
So have you had much to do with the AFL side, I guess, in regards to pre-season, or is it more just generally just looking at the kids and the recruits and so forth that could be coming through over the next few years?
Yeah, look, I mean, we're really lucky. We've moved into a wonderful new facility. I mean, there's lots of new facilities in all the footy clubs these days, and they do a wonderful job. And the Swans, are leading that charge. They've got it's a $70 million facility, the RHI building, just right near the SCG. That's been in the making for 10 or 15 years. And the QBE Sydney Swans Academy are beneficial of that. We're on one side of the wing, and you've got the seniors on the other, and the AFL women. So we're all under the same roof. So we cross paths and clearly talk footy. I don't really like to jump into the AFL side of it. I don't want to sort of, you come in, you've got a head down, bum up, do your, you know, play your role and stick to the academy. Plus, there's a lot on, and trying to get used to, you know, so many different kids in the academy and who they are and what they can do is my role. So I don't want to be sidetracked to the AFL side, even though, you know, you've got one eye on them to see how they're tracking and how they're progressing. So, yeah, it's a really good setup learning a lot and no doubt, you know, every sort of week, month that goes by, you know, hopefully we're trying to develop a lot of kids in New South Wales, particularly in our region, and the Giants will have a region as well, to hopefully go on and play either AFL or AFL Women's. And, you know, if we can bring in more talent to the talent pool, not only for our own academy but also into the talent pool, then it's a win all round.
Back in 1988, you were drafted by the Footscray Bulldogs in the top 10 of the national draft. What do you remember of draft day, and did you think that the Bulldogs was going to be a football home?
I vividly remember it. I was at Karamut Road, Warrnambool Tech back then. I was in year 10. I think it was in October. Might have been late October. It might have been early November. Myself and John McNamara and I think a teacher or two were hovering over a radio. finding out, you know, because they had the draft on the radio back then, and they read out John's name and he went to the Kangaroos, and my name was read out a couple of spots later and he went to the Bulldogs, which was quite unique because I grew up with John in school and we played footy against each other and we, you know, become good mates. And so both of us were off to the big smoke within the space of a couple of call-outs in the national draft. And back then they didn't have an age group of, sorry, an age limit of 18. We were 16. And so we finished off the year and jumped on the train and headed up to Melbourne as quick as we could.
Was there much interest from other clubs, Leon, or was it the Bulldogs that were sort of the ones that were really keen on getting you down there?
Yeah, there was a few clubs. Yeah, absolutely. But back then you actually, like right now, you know, after my experiences as a player and a coach, you talk to basically all the top 20 or top 30 draft kids, and probably even more. They probably go even further. So it's so much more advanced than what it was. And so I vividly remember, you know, talking to Gary Merrington a lot and Gary O'Sullivan from the Footscray Footy Club back then. I mean, there was probably a little bit of interest, but, I was lucky enough to go there and spent 11 years at the Bulldogs, and was just a wonderful time for my life.
89 was, an interesting year for Footscray, but also Fitzroy, because it was the year of, I guess, those merger talks. Do you have much recall of that time when you went down there, or, you know, did you sort of have a feeling of how it was going to go? Like, was it going to look like they were going to merge and become one, or what was your sort of feeling during that time?
It was just, I suppose, it was very surreal what was happening, and I was only young. I played my first sort of year half under-19s, then half reserves as a 16, 17-year-old. And then pre-season kicked off. But leading into pre-season, clearly there was a talk of the Fitzroy-Footscray merger. And then so you actually didn't know what to think. You know, I was only new to the footy club, only a year old. Probably hadn't settled much with the AFL program, because back then it was AFL and the reserves, and then the under-19s were separate. So I started in the under-9s, and then when I stepped up to the plate a bit more after my first year, I got to know a lot of the players like Hawkins and McPherson and Foster and so forth, and Mick Malthouse and these people. But then Mick clearly he left and went off to the West Coast Eagles. He got a great opportunity to go there. And so Terry Wheeler coached me in the reserves, and so he put his hand up, wanted to coach. Irene Chatfield, Dennis Gallimberti, the rest is history. They rallied the troops, and all of a sudden, you know, people were coming out of the woodwork, raising money for the club to survive. And it was a really unbelievably good year, because from where we were, the depths of probably despair, and Fitzroy were in the same boat as well. We're all of a sudden playing AFL footy. I was playing on the wing in the seniors, coached by Terry Wheeler, playing with Doug Hawkins as a 17-year-old. And all of a sudden the supporters were that, you know, unbelievably passionate because we'd saved our club. So it was it was a year I'll never forget. Even though it was my first official year in the AFL, it was just everything was perfect, if you know what I mean. Even though we didn't go on and win a flag,
yeah,
we played some footy. The club was surviving. It was flourishing. Great coaching, good people. It was back on track. And it was a really good year to be involved in.
Contempt to fist it on. Knocked on cleverly by Beveridge into the path of Cameron. Cameron deep in the pocket, pulls it back. Normally is a chance from there. And that's a magnificent goal. The best of the afternoon.
Your first two seasons, I was looking at your stats online the other night, just researching. Your first 2 years, I think you played a total of 39 games when I speak of 1990 and 1991. As an 18, 19-year-old who's still relatively fresh in their football career, what sort of helped you with that transition to AFL football so well? Because your numbers read really, really well. And I know it's not all about stats, but for someone of your age coming in and playing senior footy and playing regular footy and accumulating what you were doing, you transitioned pretty well to senior footy pretty well.
Yeah, look, I think we're really lucky. Myself and Chris Grant, I think it's always a great joke. I was taking a pick 7. He was about 104. So they clearly got that wrong, didn't they? So, Terry Wheeler and the match committee at that time, and they really managed us really well. I mean, clearly we were the up-and-coming young kids that were, probably helping the club take us into another era, but they managed just extremely well. And you had great senior people around you, as I mentioned, Dougie Hawkins and Steve McPherson and Tony McGuinness, Peter Foster, just to mention a few. And they really looked after us. They knew that we were young. They knew we were quite skinny and fragile and probably, sometimes out of our depth. But they really did take us under their wings and help us play the game week in, week out. And I think probably what helped us is we both played senior footy. Granny played down at Dalesford and I played at South Warrnambool for a year. So it probably helped us playing against men stepping into that grade. Even though it was, bloody hard at times, that was probably key for us. And then you just get used to playing against men. And I would line up. I think my first year I was 68 kilos. And so that's not a lot. And so when the wind blew at Witten Oval, I think I had to, probably wear a set of heavy boots. So it was a light frame. And I'd, up against Darren Mullane, the late Darren Mullane, who was just such a bloody good player. You look at him and he'd probably look at me and go, he just swapped me like a fly. So, it was great. It was good, great footy. I love those 90s footies because it was sort of, you'd stay in your positions. A lot of man-on-man stuff, bit of old-fashioned footy that we're probably used to. Playing out at Witten Oval at that time, you'd try to get that advantage of, on one side of the wing there would be that thick of mud, and on the other side this is where the wind blew and this is the way you'd move the footy. So it was just great suburban footy at its best.
The 93 season was no doubt one of your best. You won the Charlie Sutton medal for the club's best and fairest. Best and fairest awards really interest me because I know football was a team game and we play footy to obviously, for that premiership success as a team. But from a best and fairest award point of view, how is that celebrated by a player? And I guess on this occasion, how much did you enjoy that moment taking out, a club best and fairest award still at a relatively young age?
Yeah, look, it's a really good question about that, because I mean, being a coach and being a player, you got two different perspectives on it. As a player, when you're that young, you think about individual awards because you're probably not mature enough to not think about it. If you're probably thinking, if I'm winning some awards, I'm playing well, my spot in the team's secure, and so forth. Whereas a coach's hat, you're going, yes, it's great to give out best and fairest awards, but all you want is this even team, the sum of all can help, win more games rather than individual brands. So it's an interesting one. And I was lucky enough, I had a really poor 1992. We played finals. I had lots of knee issues and also my form wasn't great. And so I missed a lot of footy. So I really wanted to bounce back in 1993. I wasn't far off going to West Coast Eagles at the end of 1992. I probably just lost my way a little bit on the back of some injuries, and But, you know, I made a strong decision to say, no, Footscray gave me a great opportunity. I really wanted to repay a little bit of the faith and you know, went about my business. And, you know, best and fairest, I mean, good, they're good at acknowledgements, but equally it's one of those things. You do anything to play finals footy and ultimately play grand finals and you give all that back in a heartbeat. But at the end of the day, someone has to win them. They're rewards, if you know what I mean. Someone will win a best and fairest every year. There'll be another 18 this year in the AFL and we'll celebrate those people. Someone will win the Brownlow. So individuals, as long as it's, you know, done in the right way and celebrated in the right way, put them all together, they collectively help you form a really good team.
You just mentioned about the West Coast Eagles and, you know, nearly joining. Was that, did they sort of come out at you and obviously with that Mick Malthouse connection to a certain degree and suss you out, or was it something that, you know, your management or yourself went out and sort of looked at maybe looking for something just that changed if things obviously hadn't panned out the way they did in 92?
Yeah, the Eagles were probably looking at that time, had a relationship with Mick, you know, for a year or so. And, you know, he was a wonderful coach. He did great stuff at Footscray, and then clearly the Eagles, you know, winning a couple of flags, turning them into a powerhouse for so many years, and then come back and then, you know, what he did at Collingwood as well was first class. I mean, you know, he's a very, very good coach. So I had a relationship with Gary Merrington, who I live with, who drafted me at Footscray and then ended up at the West Coast Eagles. So there was a connection there, but, you know, it was really good dialogue. They were really, really, you know, it was good conversation, but in the end that loyalty and really good mates at the footy club at Footscray, and you know, glad I stayed because it just, you know, they gave me an opportunity and you feel so you really wanted to repay the faith.
There's Wine getting it to Cameron, who's a brilliant left foot kick. Look at that driving kick by Cameron, and now the Bulldogs are in front by a point.
Some good years ahead after, I guess, that 93 season. We started seeing the Doggies playing a bit more regular finals football, which was terrific. And I guess the 94 season as well is one that really interests me because it was, I guess, from a list perspective, probably a year of transition. We saw the names of Johnson, Smith, Darcy, Costa, Scotty West making their mark. And then obviously finals sort of started following that. So did you sort of feel there was a fair bit of potential in the list from that year onwards?
Yeah, you probably do. Again, when you're young and it doesn't get thrown in your face as much. But then you look around and you go, oh, hang on here. We've now all of a sudden, you know, that used to be Steve McPherson or Doug Hawkins or Peter Foster. That's now, as you mentioned, more, you know, other players, Luke Darcy and Brad Johnson and Rowan Smith and Scott West. So they did a wonderful job of bringing some talent through at the Bulldogs. So, yeah, I think you're probably right. It was the transition period because we lost Terry Wheeler early in the piece in 94. You know, they made a really early call and I was really close to Wheels and he was a great coach for me personally. And but they made a change to Alan Joyce, and then we were in the finals in 94 and 95 and progressing. Had a huge hiccup in 96, which if you actually look at a lot of sides that are, you know, having a list build or a change, they normally have a couple of years and then there's a hiccup and then they get on their journey. And our hiccup was 96 because we were building in 94 and 95, hiccup 96, and then 97, 98, 99, we were regularly right at the pointy end. So the players were there. We were playing some really good brand of footy. There was a couple of changes of coaches, but yeah, it was a really good list build. We just unfortunately didn't get there when we wanted to get there.
So what was the difference, I guess, from 96 to 97? Like obviously Terry Wallace come on board as coach, and I guess, you know, that famous Year of the Dog documentary that was probably ahead of its time back in 96, you know, showcased the season. Obviously there was a bit of, with the coaching and a few other bits and pieces, what was sort of the turnaround? Was it just having a bit of stability with Wallace coming on as coach, or was it, you know, tinkering of game plan or, you know, something else?
Yeah, look, I think I have to be wary of, if I do get involved in at the highest level again, wary of documentaries, because I've had one in 96 when we struggled and I had one in 2020 with Amazon when we struggled. So maybe the next one that comes up, I'll have to put the hand up. So, look, I mean, Terry Wallace came in and he was uh, a innovative coach. He came in, and that's brave. I mean, being in the coaching world, you know, he was as brave as they would come. He would say, no, we're not going to do it this way. We're going to do it that way. And this is the way I think we can go forward. So he was really, really brave, and we played some great footy in great preseason at the end of 96 into 97. And, you know, led us on the journey to prelim final, which, you know, we know the heartbreaking moment when the Crows knocked us off and backed it up in 98 but didn't make it. And then 99 as well, we're not far off. So he was really brave, and he wanted to play a really exciting brand. He wanted to bring people back to the footy. He wanted us to score a lot. And so, you know, wanted to move the ball quickly, take risks through the middle of the ground. So that was, you know, really brave. And so he did a really, really good job with the talent that we had. You know, he talked about Johnson and West and Smith and these guys and Scotty Wan. They played some unbelievably good footy at that time. And, you know, it's still, you look back and have regrets of, you know, if only, you know, we'd pulled the right rein in 97 or 98, you know, we might have been sitting here with as premiership players, but it is what it is. We can't live in the past.
I guess I don't want to dwell on 97 because they're probably still, you know, a real hard pill to swallow because you were so close of making it. Like, can you sort of, whether you've seen the game or just, you know, conversations you've had that were the ones who are involved, like, what was it that sort of just changed that second half and allowed Adelaide to get that run? I know, speaking to a couple of Adelaide guys that have been on the podcast before, they really built a good base with their fitness, so they knew they were able to run out games, you know, towards the back end of the year. And obviously that was a bit of a hallmark of the way they wanted to play. But from a Bulldogs point of view, now, can you point to anything that sort of just changed the tide of that result with the way it was going after such a great first half?
Yeah, look, so no doubt when it comes up on, you know, Fox at flashbacks and you play games and you watch it. I mean, I actually watch it. I mean, you actually have a little bit of an empty feeling when you're watching it. But if you actually look closely, the first half, no doubt, you know, it was quite a bit closer, and then we broke away in the third. And if you actually look at the scoring shots, Adelaide, I think, might have been 4-14 at halftime. So people might have thought, oh, well, just because you might have been up by 2 or 3 goals, you've got control of the game, and then you're going at 24 points up. They had a lot of scoring shots. They just hadn't kicked straight. And, you know, they're very, very, you know, Malcolm Blight wanted to play probably a really good brand of footy. They would attack. They'd rebound really well. And clearly they had that belief about their fitness, which you can't argue. I mean, that's what they did. They finished off us in 97. They finished off St Kilda in the grand final. You know, they did it again in 98. So their fitness base would have to say that they were really, really good at it. And they had that belief, but they had some unbelievably good footy players with high IQ. You're talking about Jarman and McLeod and Ben Hart and Johnson and Wren, and, you know, they just had lots of players that clearly could physically run out games, but their IQ, their footy IQ in moments of knowing when to go really fast and attack and when to switch to footy probably threw us out a little bit at times. And so when we might have been panicking to try to find that ultimate goal or two, they were pouncing, and their footy IQ at that particular time was just first class. And you could just see moments when you watch it on replay that have a look at that decision from McLeod, have a look at that decision from Johnson, where we might have been rushed. We were probably trying to rush to the line, get the game over and done with, win by a goal or two, and then go into a grand final, which we hadn't been for in about, you know, 40-odd years. So when you get in that situation, it can be really dangerous, and clearly that's what happened. And credit to the Crows, they pounced and made great decisions, and the rest is history.
Leon Cameron's name was thrown into the trading barrel at the end of last season. The versatile defender was picked up by the Tigers and has been an instant hit, playing a key role in the club's resurgence.
Recruited at the tender age of 17, Leon Cameron grew up knowing nothing else but the Bulldog way. Problem was, late last year, he knew his time at Witten Oval was up.
It was both our decisions. I thought it was time to move on, and they thought it was time to, you know, get some kids and use myself to obviously get some draft picks.
It wasn't long before Cameron was the target of other clubs.
When I first took the job on at Richmond, I needed someone sort of down back to help our back line and set them up. And he's been terrific the way he's really, you know, brought the ball out of defence. And not only that, he's been a very good player off the field also.
A couple of years later, you made your way to Punt Road to the Richmond Footy Club. was it hard to leave the Bulldogs, and did you need that sort of change of pace or a change of club just to freshen you up for the last part of your career?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think, Terry Wallace was, we had some challenges at the back end, but I look back and you go, putting a coach's hat on, he was fair and reasonable to say that I'd been struggling a little bit. I was playing okay. I think I went out of the side for a couple of weeks where he gave me a bit of a jolt, which was absolutely, you look back and at the time you get flat and you screw your guts up and you go, little Jesus, maybe you're getting picked on a bit, but you actually look back on it and it was the right decision. And so I probably just needed to regain that hunger for footy and probably the love of the game, and probably got sidetracked a little bit off field with business things and trying to prepare for life after footy too early. And then, Danny Frawley came along and, was a great man and really encouraged me to jump to the Tigers. And Terry had a really good open and mature chat with Terry, and he thought it was a good idea, and the rest is history. And we made a change, and we got the trade done, and I had some great years under Spud, who was just a great human being. He did a lot of right at the Richmond Footy Club, and we, unfortunately, our first year we climbed into ninth, which they were used to playing on. But it was like it was a really good ninth, if you know what I mean. Like we progressed.
Yeah,
we brought in some kids. We brought in some traded players. I was one of them, and then we led on and played in the prelim final, which were probably out of our depth against the Lions surge when they become that powerhouse. But we were probably around about the third or fourth best team, and that's probably where we ended up. And then we had some lots of injuries in the next year, and we lost a couple of players. And before you know it, we rose for a couple of years, but then we were back down near the bottom five or six again.
I'm really interested, when you change club, what it's like playing against your old club, the first time around, and then in corresponding games, and just the feel between ex-teammates and so forth. And I did notice, I was looking at the stats the other night, in the first game against the Bulldogs you played, you got the 3 Brownlow votes, so you risen to the occasion, Camo, on that time. But then secondly as well, the year after in 2001 was the famous Matty Knights Libba scuffle and so forth. So I'd love to know, was that a hard one to try and stay out of? Were you near the play? Did you have a inkling of going in and just fighting for the Tigers players? But then in the back of their mind, obviously you've got those relationships with the Bulldogs, and it got quite willing as well. So how did you sort of assess that situation as it arose?
Yeah, I mean, footy's just it's an unbelievable leveler, because you can be high and, absolutely flying 1 week, and then you can be knocked off your perch the next week. And that's the great thing. That's the great thing about supporters and tribalism and everyone wanting their side to win. And, I vividly remember the first year, yep, there was a bit of, point to prove when we played them, and we won at the MCG. I had some really good mates, so there's always going to be a bit of banter. The second year was unbelievably interesting, though, because we played at the G, and clearly Nider and Libba had a run-in, and they smashed us. They absolutely spanked us. They got beaten the week before round one, and they probably had a bad loss, I think, and we had a good win in round one. And so we're probably a little bit comfortable. They're on the back burner. They need to prove a point. It happens to be us. And they came out, and it was good old-fashioned bloodbath. They not only did they beat us up in the fist fights, they beat us on the scoreboard. And but the intriguing part about it all, Trent, was that the next day I had my engagement party with both clubs at the Swan Hotel in Richmond. And it was, again, one of those situations you couldn't even think of that was going to actually take place. And so in one part of the pub was the Bulldogs players and the other part was Richmond, and we made it work. Me and my wife now, Carolyn, were thinking about calling it off because of what happened the day before. But we got through. I think there was a lot of tension in the room. And then by the time we got to the wedding, I think we'd sort of called bygones be bygones, let bygones be bygones, and we all got, shook hands and moved on, and we're all fine.
There you go. What a story. Fantastic. You wouldn't have planned it any better, Camo, playing that game, the scuffle that occurred, and the next day your engagement party, you wouldn't read about it.
Yeah, look, you wouldn't read about it, absolutely. And then we had to play him later on in the year at back then at Telstra Dome, and I think they had to win to play finals, and we had to win to secure up top five at the time. And it was an epic Friday night clash, and it went down to the last 10 seconds. We ended up winning by a few points, and so there was a lot of passion in that game. But from there was a little rivalry built, and which is great. I mean, footy's like that. Supporters love that. Players love that. Change of clubs, you know, gets you going a little bit again. I mean, but I'm a life member at the footy club. I've 11 years as a player and 7 years as an assistant coach. 18 years is a long time of life at the Footscray Footy Club. So I'm indebted for everything I've learnt from there.
One question I'm going to ask you before I do a little quick handball segment with you there, Camo, is if there's one thing you could remember fondly about your time at the Tigers, what would it be?
Oh, no doubt the crowd. They said just they would come to the MCG. We played and it was a tough game because we played Carlton in a final in 2001 MCG 4 days after September 11, which was clearly, you know, the world had been shaken and shocked. And there was 90,000 there. And it was just an old-fashioned, full-on final of yesteryear. And the chant of the Richmond faithful was just unbelievable. Just getting used to that, you'd walk across, you'd park your car at Punt Road, you'd walk across to the MCG, and clearly the Richmond supporters can starting to get into the ground. And they got a great way, and we've seen that. We've seen them, especially the last 7 or 8 years when they've won, you know, three flags. They're an enormous supporter group, and, you know, that was just great to be a part of that big club at that particular time.
Gatherers by Kretiouk. He gets it to Stanfield. Stanfield goes to Cameron. Cameron blindly blasts away and gets a goal.
As I said, we do some quick handballs just to finish off the podcast, and I've really enjoyed the chat, mate. Great to talk to an ex-South Warrnambool player, a side that I've had some affiliation with over my football journey. I'm going to give you five names. I want you just to share one word to describe these five guys that you would have played with, both Richmond and also at the Bulldogs, to describe your connection or just the type of person that they are. So the first one I'm going to start with is Tony Liberatore.
Tenacious, unbelievably competitor, best tackler I've ever seen, pound for pound. And, you know, as much as what we had those altercations when I was at Richmond, every time you'd run out behind Libba, you knew that he had your back. And, you know, for what he did, for his height and size, I don't think he gets the credit he deserves.
Danny Subban.
Yeah, well, I played with Danny. We had a back group for about 4 or 5 years, and I was lucky enough to play with Southo. And Craig Ellis, Steve Kretiouk. We built a really good back line. And again, he was nothing better knowing he was behind you. He always had your back. He was just tough as nails. Unbelievably unique character, but just a really great clubman. I didn't know what he was doing when we got Sumich in the choker hold over in Perth. I thought a whole of Perth was going to come after us that day. But he's a really good person. And he's the sort of person you keep in touch with. You know, I hear from Southo a couple of times a year. Just a really good human being.
Wayne Campbell from the Tigers.
Well, he's a driven captain, you know, really driven player. And I think, you know, play 300 games, Campbell. I think, was it 299?
Yeah, I reckon it was. I reckon it was just shy of 300. Yep.
But he was ultimate professional. He had a great balance of professionalism and making sure he got everything out of himself as a player, but equally gathering the troops and having a great spirit off the field with the club. We had some great years. I'm really close to him. Clearly I play with him. He came up with the Giants as well. We connect. He's still he's worked with the Suns now, but he also, his family lives in Sydney. So, yeah, he's a good mate of mine and a really, really, you know, an outstanding AFL player for a long period of time.
Who was your hardest opponent?
I probably continue to say that, I mean, Mullane in that early period was just, you know, was chalk and cheese. I'm a stick figure and he's blowing with me apart. we had some great battles, myself and Graham Wright. I tried to run over the other side of the wing and get away from Mullane. Graham Wright was a really good player and we had some great battles. You know, if I'd had a couple of wins on him, he'd always come back hard. And we had some good battles for the early 90s. Well, overall, I'd have to say Peter Matera from the Eagles and Dean Kemp. Later, yeah, they moved into the middle of the ground. Those two guys, you know, were coached well from Mick Malthouse. But what Peter Matera did on grand final day, I think it was in 92, 5 goals from a wing was just legendary stuff. And he was by far one of the best wingmen I've ever seen. And Dean Kemp was such an underrated inside mid that you always knew what you were going to get. There was never, ever an easy game against those two.
It's funny you say that because I reckon I've had a number of midfielders that have jumped on the podcast and have said the same thing about Dean Kemp. Underrated, never got the accolades what he should have gotten, especially, I guess, probably here in Victoria compared to obviously it would have been held in very high regard in WA, but just never really got the attention over here and in the media of how good he was.
Yeah, exactly right. Yep.
Best character. Who was the one that you could enjoy a beer with, a bit of banter at the club, whether it's the Bulldogs or the Tigers?
There was a lot of them. Ben Harrison, I only had him for a year at Richmond, but then he went to the Bulldogs. Really good person. Had the right balance. You know, Matty Richardson was great character. I mean, we actually, again, some of the things he used to do on the field was just extreme, you know, but equally off the field. You know, you could have a great beer and a laugh. Had some great times at Tigerland. I mean, my early years, Dougie Hawkins and Steve McPherson, not only did they teach me things on the field, they taught me things off the field. And but equally, they were tough and hard and they absolutely bled, you know, red, white and blue. And those sort of guys made my journey into Footscray a lot easier. Because they'd take you under your wing, and they would look out you after you like a father figure, and so I could go on and on and on. I mean, I talked about Libba, Scotty Wine, like unbelievable captain, just soul of the earth, gets it done. So some really good people, good friends for life.
I'm going to give you a scenario to sign off, Camo. You're 40 metres out, directly in front, siren's gone, and you've got to have a shot at goal. Are you kicking with your left or your right foot? Because we know how well you kicked on both sides. Which one would you be kicking the goal to win the game for, whether it's the Doggies or the Tigers?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one. I mean, I've probably got more power on my left. If you say 45, I'm probably on my left, but probably a bit closer. I'm probably a little bit more accurate on the right, but I was extremely lucky to have two older brothers to give me a leg up throughout my junior career to... It's one of those lucky things. You know, they played footy, I followed, I hung around their heels and they taught me how to kick left and right and the rest is history. And so that was my advantage and that's what I took into my career.
Leon Cameron, been an absolute pleasure to chat about your footy journey, both at the Tigers and also at the Footscray Bulldogs. Thanks for coming on, mate. Appreciate it.
No problem, Trent, anytime. Enjoy.
Reynolds chips away, gets Libra Torre, just a little far again. It's twice Reynolds has missed his mark. Cameron. Well, he's going to go all the way himself, running into a bad angle, kicks the goal!
That's the end of episode number 58. If you've missed any previous episodes, you can catch them all on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Amazon Music. We're on all the social media platforms, so drop us a line on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter on any particular episode you've enjoyed or a guest you would love to hear. If you would like to support the podcast, you can do so via the website Buy Me A Coffee. Search for the 90s Club Footy Podcast and you can show your support. Next week, we catch up with West Coast Eagles superstar, Ashley McIntosh.
It's tough, it's rugged, it's good, solid AFL football.